Folks, this is your host Austin Williams, and welcome to Relevant Tones. We are chatting with Sarah Bell Reed today, and I couldn't be more excited to feature Sarah as an artist, educator, improviser, all these things. She's been a huge inspiration to me as someone who works with electronic music and modular synthesis and just a number of other fascinating ways to do signal processing with sounds. I find her just general philosophies and approaches to music and improvisation to be really refreshing and grounded in really approachable and realistic ways to just make the most of what you can and get a lot of economy out of just simple ideas. And I think that is so wonderful to recognize. So I was very excited when Sarah agreed to be a guest on this show, and I am also excited to share the interview that we had. Before we do that, I just want to remind our listeners that we do have a Patreon. Please go on patreon.com/relevanttones, and you will find some unedited episodes and some longer extended cuts with our guests, because sometimes we don't have all the time we'd like to share and we still talk about some fascinating things. So check it out, and here we go. Here's my conversation with Sarah Bell Reed. I hope you enjoy.
My name is Sarah Bell Reed. I am a performer composer who plays the trumpet, modular synthesizer, other electronic instruments. And I often say that I also make a lot of music with things that I find lying around my house, because that's true. I'm also an educator, and yeah, that's kind of who I am.
That's fantastic. I'm so happy to have you on the show, Sarah. I've been a longtime follower, fan. I think a lot of your work and a lot of your process kind of got me through lockdown time when we were all so isolated, and I saw maybe some of the stuff that you were doing, and it actually really inspired me to kind of like keep working on things during that time. So
thank you for saying that. I'm really happy to hear that.
Yeah. Well, thank you for continuing to create art even through really tumultuous times. So I've known Sarah for a while. I participated in her learning sound and synthesis class for a bit, and then just been a huge fan ever since. And I find your music and process just very compelling, and what you are able to do, like you said, with found objects and how you can make a trumpet not sound like a trumpet is really inspiring to me as well. And just your overall like seemingly full use and expression with electronic instruments is really inspiring. And I'm very happy to have you on the show.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Happy to be here.
Yeah. So I think a topic that I really want to speak with you about, and I actually like to speak about this topic to other musicians, like who are really into extended techniques on their instruments. And I kind of see like when you're doing signal processing specifically with like modular and other like DSPs with your trumpet, like it's obviously an extension of your instrument. Where do you kind of allow the limitations of your acoustic self or even the electronic side guide you in your creation or your paths of composition?
It's a really interesting question. I mean, there are two things that kind of jump into my mind right away. Mm-hmm. The first is just how important I think limitations are. Not just necessarily limitations of an instrument, like it can only do this or it can't do this, but kind of intentionally imposed limitations creatively.
Yeah.
On a process. That's just really helpful for me. I find that as soon as when I have the whole possible world of sound or music in front of me, mm-hmm. It's almost kind of paralyzing, because it's just like, oh my goodness, like, where do I even begin? If I could literally make any sound, which is often how you feel with something like a modular synthesizer or, mm-hmm. you know, a blank screen in, you know, on a computer programming language, you're like, I could do anything. Where do I even begin? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm a big fan of if the instrument doesn't have its own limitations, just imposing some.
Yeah.
And the second thing that popped into my mind when you asked the question was that I largely think of my compositional process and my improvising as a co-creative process between myself and my instrument.
Okay.
And so things that are maybe limitations of the instrument or ways that the instrument kind of pushes back on toward me or against me, I really get excited by. I don't really think of them as like bad things. I kind of think of them as like really interesting opportunities to work with the unique identity of that instrument.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Totally.
Thank you.
It's like you want to try and stretch things, right? And be as creative with what you have in front of you. But if something's really pushing back, and it's the whole trying to fit a square peg into a round hole thing. Like you can maybe try and get it in there a little bit, but then maybe you need to start thinking about it differently and see what what it's offering in front of you, rather than trying to, you know, keep pushing it in a direction.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a quote from an interview with David Tudor that I reference frequently because it's just really inspiring to me, which is, and I'm paraphrasing the quote here, but it's something along the lines of like, I don't want to kind of be in control or force my instrument to respond in a certain way. I want to be able to discover what it wants to say.
Yeah.
And I think that speaks to that idea of co-creation. It's like, you know, I'm not interested necessarily in being the, like, the grand master at the wheel of my instruments.
Right.
I want to, you know, give them something and then get something back that maybe surprises me and challenges me to, you know, respond in a different way.
How often do you find that those surprise moments that you're not expecting completely kind of shift your direction in a piece or in an improvising session, or, you know, whenever you're creating, like
in an improvisation, I can completely abandon any, you know, anything that I'm doing on a moment's notice. If something happens on purpose or by accident, that is just captivating in the moment. Like, my whole kind of motivation behind improvising is to just listen deeply and be in the moment, right? And you get to hear, if you get to hear a brand new sound for the first time, as it's happening with the folks who are sitting there, maybe listening and experiencing the performance as a shared listening experience, that's just incredibly magical. So I will always follow and kind of harness those and let them take me where they want to take me. But, you know, if I'm like in a session that's more focused on a specific piece of music that I'm composing and something accidental happens that's really beautiful.
Yeah.
There's a balance you need to strike between like, ooh, that's cool. Maybe let me play with that for a few minutes, but I'm not going to let it turn, you know, this album of trumpet and electronics music into an album for like, you know, whatever, amplified frying pan or something. Like, I'm not going to let it totally deviate the plan.
Totally. Can you provide an example, maybe a piece of yours where there was something you were unexpected, something unexpected happened, and it made kind of the final cut, or it made the final product of the piece, and you were happy about it.
Oh yeah, I think everything I've ever published has that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind is my Underneath and Sonder record, which is mm-hmm. trumpet and electronics. It's mm-hmm. it was an improvised. So, you know, the album itself was fully improvised and it was recorded in one take. That was put on the album.
Okay.
I had been kind of touring that piece, or that like improvised world. I'd been touring that improvised world, I guess, mm-hmm. for a couple of months. So mm-hmm. although every time I played it, it was different, I kind of was very familiar with the instrument setup and the interactions yeah. and the possible places that I could go. But then in the moment of recording, there were a lot of things that happened that had never happened before. And sure. one of them, I don't even remember at the moment. This is kind of an old album, so I don't remember yeah. what track it's on, but there's this very sudden low drone mm. that comes out of nowhere. And it came out of nowhere in real life.
Yeah.
I remember
yeah.
the moment there's all kinds of noise, and all of a sudden there's this epic low drone. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of like froze. I was like, wow, I don't want to move right now because you know, the way that album was created, I had interaction between the trumpet and the audio. And so any sound I made or any physical movement I made could very well kind of make things change.
Yeah. Yep. We'll be right back. What are some things that kind of keep you grounded during your improvs? Are they, is it form? Is it just like a simple idea that you want to exhaust to its full extent? Any and all of those possibly?
Yeah. I mean, when I'm improvising in front of a live audience, for me, it's all about listening. Like, and I don't mean, I know we always are listening when we're playing music, but it's a kind of listening that really just, it really calms me down and it really focuses me, my energy, and like just keeps me very present in the moment.
Yeah.
I think it's something that I really learned about from Paulina Oliveros's writing, all of her writing and her her work on deep listening.
Yeah.
And there's something that I remember reading in one of her books about a way of kind of opening your listening. And she, I don't know if it had to do with the act of walking on stage or if that's just what I started to do with it, because this is something I do every single time I ever walk onto a stage. And it is like a one of those kind of requirements for me before I start to play.
Yeah.
The idea that she was writing about was basically that you go through this intentional process of opening your ears, kind of like imagining that they can float off of your head and into the corners of the room. And like you're opening yourself up not only to receive and be present to the sounds that you're about to make as the person on stage, but also to all of the sounds and voices of the people who are in the room with you sharing that listening experience. And also to, you know, the sound of the streetcar going by outside and the school bell ringing down the block. And like, so the exercise keeps going and going and going. And it's like, how far can you, how deeply can you open up your ear, your ears and your hearing to any possible sound in the entire universe?
Yeah.
So like beyond Earth, beyond our, you know, and it's really special because there's something about taking even like 20 seconds to do that or 10 seconds.
Yeah.
That it, I don't know, for me, it like connects me with, why I'm doing this whole thing as a musician in a really meaningful way. And it removes, you know, the nerves and the overthinking and the overcomplicating that can sometimes be present in a show. And you're like, oh, I got to do this, or don't forget to turn that knob, or oh my God, did I leave my dishwasher running, or, you know, anything like that.
It's kind of, that's so fascinating. I was picturing while you were describing that, it's like if you're, as a visual artist, you're like imagining your canvas just completely blank and you're really seeing how far it goes and what, you know, you're just picturing that. And then you open up your eyes or ears in this case, and you realize the tools that you have, the color palette that you're working with, and then And then you create on it, and
you create from that place.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Yeah. Cause then, and then you start to make sound from that mode of listening where it like puts you in a curious state of mind almost where, you know, things that could be accidents or mistakes or limitations, to bring it back to earlier. Or like someone walking in late and the door slamming and then it getting stuck in your delay line, or, you know, it could be perceived as like a disaster, or it could be like, how fascinating. That's kind of beautiful. Right. And that's usually, that's what I prefer. Like that's how I want to be feeling in the moment. So
yeah,
I think that's what I go to.
Thank you.
and on that side, I think that you what you experience is the what we mentioned earlier is kind of the painting that the artist is providing, mm-hmm. And how they are deciding to sculpt it. And maybe a better metaphor is like a block of marble that you're chipping away at, mm-hmm. because yeah. You're just slowly kind of like seeing what it's becoming and how it to work with it, and all these right. different nooks and crannies you can start to dig into.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I also do think a lot about the idea of creating like a transference of energy or a synchronous moment, mm-hmm. between multiple sounds. This might sound, I'm sorry if this sounds totally woo-woo and crazy, just like I'll try to bring it back down to earth, but I've just been talking about listening to the universe. And your listeners are going to be like, what in the world is this person doing?
You're West Coast. It's fine.
These are just musical ideas that I find really interesting. And they have to kind of do with structure and form. So mm-hmm. when I talk about like a transference of energy, what I'm kind of talking about is like how one sound can morph into another, or how one musical moment can collide with another,
sure.
or juxtapose another. And mm-hmm. I always think about sound in motion. So I love to think about like the physics of a sound. Mm-hmm. If you were to imagine it like a ball that's rolling down a slope, for example, and accelerating and then dropping and falling 8 feet and then landing. And then what happens? Does it shatter? Does it bounce? Does mm-hmm. it squish and get stuck mm-hmm. to the ground? Does it, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. does it defy gravity and like almost hit and then oof, like ease its way back up. Yeah. I'm making all these gestures no one can see. But those, to me, like all those kinds of mental images sound amazing.
Yeah,
in
yeah.
my head. And that's kind of what I'm trying to really craft when I'm like designing patches or when I'm thinking okay. about transitional moments in my music. And so yeah. I'm just bringing that up because you asked about grounding a performance and you mentioned structure. So that
yeah.
is something in addition to the listening that I do pay a lot of attention to is, you know, I'm not paying too much attention, or I'm not pre-planning like what are the specific sounds or notes, but I am really practicing how am I going to transition in 100 different ways between, mm-hmm. you know, loud and soft, or between, you know, granular and pure,
yeah,
or whatever, yeah. whatever the contrasting worlds may be.
So it's a very physical experience from what it sounds like.
It is.
Yeah.
For me, yeah.
No, it's cool. I think that like, and I've had this conversation with a lot of artists recently. We forget that we are physical beings a lot on stage. We get very wrapped up on how things sound. And the joke in the audio engineering world, which I also dip my toes in, is music is about how it looks, not how it sounds. But like, there's kind of some truth to it. when you see, you know, a group with kind of lacking stage presence, or you're not engaging the audience. Like, you know, I think that there's something to be said for wanting to create that for an audience member, or even just in general, like you're talking, like creating a physicality to a music that a listener will engage with. It's very important.
Thank you.
huge proponent of education, educating people about synthesis. And I know I've watched some videos of you speaking about deep listening, which we've, you know, brought up before. And maybe I was just kind of curious, what do you think pushed you in that direction of wanting to educate, you know, people about this world?
That's a good question. I've always loved sharing what I'm really passionate about with other people. And in terms of synthesis and sound design and electronic music in particular, I had a little bit of a rough beginning, like getting started with it. I really struggled to find my way at first. And I was a lifelong musician studying, you know, classical trumpet playing. So music itself was very familiar to me, but electronic music, synthesizers, all of that stuff was like a whole new language. Yeah. And I fell into the camp of folks who was deeply curious and really interested and super overwhelmed and intimidated. And the story that I told myself when it didn't click in 45 seconds, which it never does. I did not know that at the time. But the story that I told myself was like, I'm too stupid for this. Yeah. I don't get this. This isn't for me. This is for people with a PhD in electrical engineering or math or something like that. And I'll never be that person. And so but there was these competing voices. There was this one who was like, I really want to, like, I love these sounds. The instruments are so fun and cool looking. I want to play them. And then there was the, no, Sarah, you can't do this. This, you're not smart enough, blah, 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 blah. Thankfully that negative voice didn't win. And over the course of a number of years, I, through the kindness of some friends and like scrounging on the internet, I was able to learn, and then a bunch of trial and error, I was able to like learn my way around a modular synth. And then, you know, and then what I started to realize when I started to share this kind of music with people and build an audience and a community, I started to kind of realize that that experience I had with getting started was not unique to me.
Sure.
And a lot of people find it intimidating or confusing because it is. Yeah. It's a huge technical topic.
Right.
And so, I think the fact that I struggled with it so much early on makes me, a good teacher, because I didn't get it. I really had to break things down into every single step. I'm the kind of person who was always like, but why? Like, why does sound work that way?
Yeah.
I don't want to just know how the tool works. I want to know why. And so that's the way that I teach. I go very slow and kind of step by step. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're fine. I still reference a lot of your materials that I got from Sound and Synthesis, just because, it's basic concepts that you think you have it down, and then something behaves completely differently from what you expect it to, and then you're like, well, why? Yeah, like that.
Why? Yeah.
Why did that happen the way it did? Because I have no clue.
And then it's fascinating. Then you can learn more and get to know your instrument better. Yeah, I think, in brief, to answer your question, as soon as I realized that there were other people who were maybe selling themselves short and like saying they weren't capable, who wanted to be able to make music. And I realized that I could maybe give them a little bit of, I could just help them realize that that's not true. And they are 100% capable. That was it. I was like, okay, this is amazing. This is all I want to do.
what I really enjoy is how accessible you make it, both from a the way you explain things. Like you said, it's you break it down really well, and it's in ways that are really approachable. But also specifically with modular synthesis, a lot of people are, you know, turned away because it can be expensive. But your promotion of VCV Rack is fantastic, yeah. And it is such a great resource that I tell people all the time, because, you know, yes, I have physical, you know, instruments, but I'm like, if you're curious, just, it's a free software, and a lot of the, you know, fun physical modules that you see online, they've made, you know, digital versions of them. So, and go check them out. They're free, if not very affordable. So, you know, exactly. you can go check them out and see what's up. So, totally. I think that's so important to, like you said, for people who are interested in it, and, you know, they might create, you know, or there might be roadblocks that they might think exist, but ultimately I think it's actually a very accessible way to start to make some really wacky noises that who knows what they'll do, you know, ultimately.
Yeah, exactly. It's exciting.
It absolutely is. Well, that's fantastic, Sarah. Thank you for sharing that. And I think that's really important. I think there needs to be more people, especially in electronic music. And I think this is actually becoming more of a reality with music production and electronic music. It's becoming a lot more accessible, and people are finding tools to be able to utilize and extend the range of their instrument or the range of their production that much further, you know, every day. Yeah. So. Totally. Well, great. Let's take this last minute to, I'd love for you to share any projects you have coming up, or anything else you want to plug on the show and throw into the universe.
Based on what we were just talking about, if anyone is curious about learning VCV Rack or dipping your toe into the modular synth world, I have a free class that is an introduction to the free software, which is VCV Rack. So it's and it really is free, I promise. So maybe we can include a link in show notes kind of situation for folks if you want to check that out.
Great.
That's just, it's like, you could do it probably in a couple of hours or over the span of a weekend or something, and just make a couple sounds, see if you like it, if it excites you, and then kind of go from there. Musically, the next project that I have on the horizon, I'm actually really excited. I'm always excited about these things, but I'm releasing a duo album with a good friend of mine named Vinny Golia, who's an amazing multi-woodwind player, band leader, improviser. And it's an improvised album. He's playing some really amazing instruments, like quarter tone contrabass flute.
Okay.
And really big clarinets and really small clarinets. And I'm playing quarter tone flugelhorn and some modular synth and a little bit of Max MSP.
Yeah.
And it's really fun. And it'll probably be sometime late this year, or early next year that it's coming around.
Well, that sounds so cool. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, great. Well, Sarah, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck with everything you got.
Thank you for having me. Thanks for the conversation.
Yeah. So that about wraps it up today with our chat with Sarah, and about her music and process and education and all these different things that she's a part of. As I mentioned before, she's a huge inspiration to me and my creation, and also just a really good person to model after. She was very kind to speak with, and look forward to hopefully speaking with her again in the future. Also, check out her website, her Bandcamp, sarahbellreed.com, Bandcamp, Sarah Bell Reed. She has a couple albums out, which are fantastic, especially if you throw on some good headphones, some lovely sound design on there. Definitely go check her out, support her, stream her, all these good things. This is your reminder that Relevant Tones is a product of Access Contemporary Music. Find out more at acmusic.org, and we'll catch you next time. Thanks. Thank you.
Yeah.